All right. So the concept of a palimpsest, why is that so topical? Why is that important to the people in power in this story? And Aaron touched on it, and it's the desire to never be wrong, to be infallible, right? You've heard that word before? Infallibility, it's a desire. I think we all would like to be infallible. I guess I can't speak for everyone. I know I'm not infallible. For example, I gave you the wrong date for your meeting, right? Now, what I did to change that was to send out another thing, but I also recognized, it's like somebody made a mistake. I don't know who it was. Okay, it was me. All right, somebody made a mistake, and it isn't rewriting history, it's saying there was a mistake, this is the real thing moving forward. Okay, now if I had gone back and changed that, that first email, just gone in, changed it, sent it out to you so that it said the right thing, and then I denied that the wrong thing had ever been sent out or written, how would you prove that I was wrong? If the source material had been adjusted. It'd be very difficult, right? Unless you were super sophisticated with computers, it would be very difficult. That's what this entire ministry, everything that Winston does, is part of that changing of history so that it no longer is something that we can refer to or that Winston can refer to. He knows that it's wrong. He can remember it. But what's the problem? If he wants to generate change, if he wants to spread the idea that things are not as they seem, what's the problem now? The problem is, how does he prove it? Does that make sense? How does he prove it? We prove things by referencing them. We prove things by going to sources that we trust to tell the truth, to understand what's happening, and to be able to prove the things that we're trying to prove. And for Winston, now this is quaint in a way, right? There's some things that Orwell does that are pretty forward-looking. Really amazingly forward-looking. Things like the telescreen. But he's talking about newspapers in this. They go back and change newspapers. They have to go back and change magazines. They have to go back and change the official record of what this world believes. And as we get further into the book, there are situations where Big Brother is credited with inventing airplanes, inventing all sorts of things that Winston knows existed before Big Brother, but that he can't prove, because everything that you would go back to is not going to reference the Wright brothers. It's going to reference Big Brother, different brother. Make sense? So there's a twofold approach to limiting what the people in this society know. The first is the information is manipulated. What's the second thing? Talked about this in the previous lecture. Another thing very important in terms of how you would describe and feel and discuss anything happening in your society. Language, maybe? Right? What's happening to the language in this society? Malia?
They get rid of all the adjectives, so it's just, I don't know, like they say doublethink when they, like the language is getting minimized so they can't express themselves.
Right, that's the big thing, minimized, okay? It is minimized. Think about when you describe something that you truly enjoy or even that you truly hate, right? The larger your vocabulary is, the better off you are, right? The better you can explain what you feel, why you dislike something, why you enjoy something, why you love someone, right? All of those things are important vocabulary, how we discuss. You don't need, in this society, you don't need, somebody's got a lot of noise going on in the background. A lot of banging. All right. So all of these things are being systematically eliminated from the vocabulary. We're going to talk about a character in a little while named Syme, whose entire job is to eliminate words from the vocabulary, from the dictionary, so that you can only describe things in a very minimal fashion. Right? And sometimes it's one of those things that becomes a little concerning when you listen to people speak sometimes, where they are not explaining what they want, or look at vocabulary as something that is not necessary. You know it's always there, which is great, but if you came in one day and your dictionary was the size of a pamphlet filled with words like good, ungood, double plus ungood, and that's all you had to work with, and it was illegal to use other words, perhaps that would be a problem. And what this allows for is for the party to control everything, including what? What does Winston say the party can't control? Leah?
He says something like in between his ears.
Right, your mind. Okay, this is the war, this is the fight. Big Brother wants to control this part of your mind as well, what's in your head. And part of that is going to be to eliminate the ways that you can describe feelings, emotions, concepts. Okay? This is what poets do for us a lot of times. Imagine, you know, it's difficult to describe things like hate, love, passion, right? These things are sometimes difficult to get across. And if you can't get those things across, if there literally is no word for them, you've never been taught the word, you know that there's a feeling or a concept there, but you have no way to get it across. And that would be horrible. No way to look up how to get that across. When we find artists, when we find singers, poets, and I know all of those are artists, but when we come across those, they talk to us because they're describing things that we've felt. Yeah? Does that make sense? I'm getting very subtle nods. You guys are very subtle in front of the camera. Barely moving. All right. So if it's something you want me to cover more, you're going to have to go like, no, I don't get it. So this is what you're going to be looking for. Is the reduction in the way that you can express yourself, okay? And we hate that. We should hate that. That's censorship. This is censorship on a level that is, unfortunately, these kinds of things have been tried, right? Not to necessarily the same level, but not because they didn't want to, only because for some reason they had a hard time doing it. Think about that, right? About the descriptions of things. Now, pretty soon into chapter 4, we get to what he does for a living. I want to make sure that everybody understands that newspeak is, that's what Malaya was talking about, right? The reduction to the point of elimination of adjectives and adverbs, the utilization. You don't need good or bad, right? You just need good or what would be bad? Just use a different prefix. Aaron? Aaron?
Ungood.
Ungood, right? So you can just take away bad.
Ungood.
Right, ungood is right. So you just would say it's either good or it's ungood. Those are your opposites. Okay, now if you're interested in language, and I won't tell anybody if you're interested in language, but if you are, I hope, I haven't checked, but your download hopefully has an appendix in it that talks about the language. It's an afterword that discusses some of the ways that Orwell spoke about the language. If not, I can try and get that to anybody that's interested. But even if you don't read that, looking at what his concept was with language. And I know sometimes students get frustrated with being told that they have to learn new vocabulary or be precise with their speech or to be descriptive and really discuss what you mean. If you read this book and don't come away with at least a little bit of an appreciation of what language and vocabulary does for you, you might want to read it again. It's very important to come out of your situation and be able to describe what you want, what you need, why something is good, and why something is ungood. Don't use ungood. Oh, okay, we'll move on. Let's see. So how are your books paginated? Do you have pages on them? A lot of you using your downloads?
Yes.
Okay. If I said page 38, would you have the list of things that Winston was working on at work? Or can you get to it right now with your Zoom up?
I'm here. Hey,
can you keep your camera just in one place? Oh, you just turned it off. Okay. All right. Okay. Can you get there? Does that make sense? 38?
Yeah.
Does it have time 17384 BB? Is that one of the things
yeah.
out there? Okay, perfect. So in the chapter, and if you don't see it right now, that's fine. There's a list of items that are going to come across his desk. Now, Winston talks about memory holes. What are memory holes? Anybody come across memory holes? Malaya?
Is that where the information that they changed goes, like to basically get rid of it forever?
Right. Where does it go? What is it?
Fire.
It's fire. It's a furnace. Everybody has a little hole with a little screen over it. And then what ends up happening is you throw any piece of paper that you were using that could in any way indicate what you were doing, and you throw it in a hole, and the hole goes down into the furnace and it gets burned up. No records other than the official record. And when the official record is changed, that becomes the official record, and there are no other copies out there. Okay. Now, you might say, well, what about, what's something that we would need to get our heads around in terms of kind of a real world situation? We're talking about newspapers, magazines, movies, things like that. When you read that, did you go, there's a problem here? Nobody had a problem with it. Nobody wondered if there was just one newspaper created in the entire world. That's something that sometimes people do wonder about, right? Well, there's, back in the day when you had newspapers, there was huge amounts of newspapers. Everybody got a newspaper, right? Those newspapers would be different than the new official newspaper, right? Yes, that would be different because it's been changed, right?
Yeah.
So with that change, you now have official record. Now with newspapers and magazines, where do most of them go anyways? Most of them get thrown away, right? Yes, most of them get thrown away. Newspapers are notoriously disposable. Now that's changed a little bit because now we get our news frequently. Most of us get it predominantly online, right? Most of us get our news predominantly online. And that is problematic in some ways. You save a newspaper, right? If you save something like that, it's either called hoarding or archiving, right? If you do it in an official capacity, it's archiving. If you have stacks of them all over the place, that's close to hoarding, right? But you still have that copy, right? If you go to a newspaper's office, they will have a morgue, right? They will have copies of everything that they have printed. Now, sometimes it's on microfiche, right? You guys know what microfiche is? It's very tiny fish, smaller than minnows. No, that's not true. That's not true. Microfiche, it's F-I-C-H-E, and it is a way to take printed materials, shrink them down to a very small size. You can look it up and store it in a much smaller place. Go to it, look it up, you put it in a little machine, and you can read through and see the actual copy. And that way you don't have to save acres and acres and acres of newsprint. You can save just a little bit, right? Something much smaller. But you still have that record. In an online environment, what is a very real issue, very real question? Guys are, I don't know if you can see the tears, little ones, there's sadness. What's the problem with an online thing? You should know about this from researching things, the questions that exist with online research. What's the big problem? Yeah, Aaron?
Anyone can create information online?
Well, that's part of it. Right, but you can look. If you see a news organization that's called Pond's Ramblings, started on April 15th, 2020, that's probably not going to be something that a legitimate source of information. I wouldn't have been around for very long. There's no idea of where I get my sources or my information. But if you look at something that's been around longer, has some history to it, then hopefully you would look at that. Now, a lot of people don't, right? A lot of people are looking for what? They're looking for something that supports what they already think, not what's really true. So if I said something that was inflammatory, incendiary, people wanted that to be true, I might then become a cited source, even though I'd been online for 24 hours. That should be horrifying to everyone. Okay? So online, Aaron's correct. Anybody can do that. I could have a news feed organization set up by the end of the day, no problem. Also, the problem is exactly what Winston is doing, which is changing that information. You can go back and edit something that has been said. Now, editing is generally good, but I'm talking about manipulating history. It's like, I don't want to have said that. I'm going to change that. And that becomes a very big problem. And so for Winston, what he's doing is changing the official record. Most of what's gone on out there, right? I could have read something in a newspaper from 5 years ago. I couldn't find one. I don't know where it is. I'd have to go to the place, if it even still existed, to find it. Most of that stuff gets thrown away. And if somebody does have one and they compare it to what Winston has created, most people are going to believe what Winston created. That's the official record. Does that make sense? Does that sound horrible, horrifying, really disturbing? I hope so. All right, who we got there, Max? Max. Max, can you hear us? All right, Max is buffering. So, this... Max, you getting a little feedback there?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's it. We're in chapter 4, about page 38.
Okay.
So let's look at what he gets across his desk. Time 17384 BB, speech malreported Africa rectify. Now, times is what? Yeah, Aaron?
The magazine?
Yeah, the paper, right? Yeah. Or times, newspaper or magazine. Probably a newspaper. 17384. What's that? That's a date. Okay, so your European date process switches the day and the month the way that we do it, okay? So obviously there's no, we're looking at the 17th of March, 1984. And Big Brother, that's EB. Make sense? BB's speech was reported incorrectly. It was malreported, badly reported. It was a speech about Africa. And what does rectify mean? Wow, getting some weird feedback. But yeah, Aaron?
To correct or fix.
To correct or fix. Perfect. Okay. So that's what we're talking about. He has to go back and make. Anybody know who's giving us feedback there? All right. We've got misprints. We've got malquotation. All right. Does anybody, is that background noise that they can get shut down? Coming through? All right, just with these, you got to be careful. If you've got a lot of background noise, it's going to come through and impact the class. So you've got to mute yourself. Okay. All right. So we've got this sense of what Winston does. Now, Winston has this little bit of enjoyment over his job because it's one place where he can be what? What can he do? Not available in any other aspect. Malaya?
He can be creative.
Exactly. This is a creative outlet. Now, it's creative like somebody counterfeiting a painting, which is creative, but it is something that gives his mind something interesting to work on. So he is going to fix those things. He talks to us about the memory holes. And that concept of palimpsest that we talked about at the beginning, that should start to make sense, right? Remind us, what was a palimpsest? It's on page 40. Page 40. What was a palimpsest? Aaron?
Like history that was changed or like written over?
Yeah, does it yeah, well, that's it. You erase and then rewrite. Think of it as a kind of an etch-a-sketch, right? If you've ever played, you guys know what etch-a-sketch is, yeah? Okay, yeah. So you make your drawing and you shake it. Well, maybe the drawing doesn't erase completely, but then you start drawing over it again, right? That would be a type of palimpsest. And for Winston, that's what he's doing. He's erasing the past and then rewriting what has happened. So that has, the big brother has to be right. And for a lot of the chapter that he talks about what is happening, there's no way for big brother to be wrong. He remembers, right? He remembers that the chocolate ration is incorrect, but by the time he gets done with it, it's exactly what the ration was supposed to be, right? And you guys know what rations are, yeah? What's a ration? Nathan, what's a ration?
I'm not sure.
Not sure? Abigail, what's a ration? I caught Abigail just as she was drinking. How's that for timing? You're welcome. Yeah,
a ration is basically like you take food and then you divvy it up a certain way and you pass it out to people, but it's only a specific amount.
A specific amount, right? Where some sort of controlling entity is saying, you get this much, you get this much, and you get this much. Ration has a very specific kind of feel to it. All right? What kind of environment do we see rations in? You guys have experienced it. Sarah?
Like war environments?
War environments is one, absolutely. Right, where there is a limited amount of materials or food supplies, and therefore to prevent people from having too much or too little, the attempt is to get everybody gets enough to feel like they don't have enough. Okay? So where else do we see this? Aaron?
Today with like
in times of quarantine. Absolutely. Yeah. If you've gone to a store, almost all of the stores have a ration list. Nobody can buy more than 100 rolls of toilet paper. Nobody can buy more than, you know, 200 pounds of rice. We don't have any more pasta. We don't have any more cleaning wipes. But when we do have them, this is all you can buy. That's rationing. Make sense? In times of uncertainty or times of economic deprivation, or as was said earlier, in times of war, that is frequently something that happens. Either the supply is completely cut off, you know, which is what happens when you go to the store and you see absolutely empty shelves. It does. There is no ration there because there is no product there, yeah? Or you are told, okay, we just got in X amount of toilet paper. You can have a package, you can have a package, you can have a package. That's rationing. So though that control of supply. Now sometimes you can't get anything, right? In wartime, and we can take World War II as an example, all of the production or almost all of the production capacity in the United States and in many countries was directed where? What do you have to make in war? Malaya?
It was directed to the military and the army because they needed this weapons and food and supplies.
Yeah, right. You got to feed your troops. You got to clothe your troops. You got to get your troops the sticks that fire things, right? Boom. You need rifles. You need tanks. You need planes. You need boats, right? So during the war, there was almost no automobile production. It stopped. Those companies were making jeeps and planes and guns. Right? There was, nylon production was not available for women's stockings. It was going to the war effort to make parachutes and cords. Right? So the production was redirected. Now, World War II was interesting because the country was behind that conflict. They supported that conflict. Across the board almost, right? So people had a reason to support that effort. They wanted to. That sacrifice was part of their support of the conflict. Does that make sense? And when you have that kind of support, when the government says you can't have chocolate or you can't have a new car, that's that we need that to be successful, people are like, okay, that's fine. A huge amount of production, a huge amount of capacity available, directed towards, and what happens to the things made for war? What happens to almost all the stuff made for war? It gets destroyed in war, right? It gets destroyed. Yeah. That's what happens. Now, of course, not all of it gets destroyed, but it's really not good for a lot most of the time after the conflict. This society is at war always. Always. Now, it'll change as to which side of the conflict they're on, but they are always at war. Why would that be good for Big Brother? Aaron?
Then he always has a reason to ration things.
Yes. If you're rationing things, what's happening to your quality of life, your level of life? Go ahead, Aaron.
Goes down.
It either goes down or stays the same, right? It's not going to elevate. And if it's already pretty low, it's going to stay pretty low. But there is no elevation of social status. And the class that has been established here is you have a very upper class, which is the Big Brother level, the very tip of the pyramid. You've got an inner party, which does, relatively speaking, very well. And then you've got the outer party. And below the outer party, the massive majority of the pyramid, what do you have? Aaron?
The proles or working class.
The working class. They are kept in a constant state of not having very much, but not having very much education, not having very much in the way of a job, not having very much in the way of money. They are kept completely ignorant of their situation. So all these things tie in to, well, in a way it ties into class, ties into social structure, and he will talk about this more as we get forward, but go forward. Think about this. Language, history, economics. All three of these things, kind of a tripod of control that Big Brother is utilizing. All right, that works. Any questions up to that point? Yeah.
I guess this is more of like a speculative question, but okay. Do we ever get to hear like what Eurasia and East Asia, what it's like living there and their type of government or any of that?
We get a little bit of that. And what happens there is that Orwell has, you guys saw the map from the last lecture, right? Okay,
yeah.
So we've got three world states that exist, Eurasia, East Asia, and Oceania. They all will utilize some aspect of this Big Brother model. Absolute control from a very small set of the population over the rest of the population. Continual war, always fighting over the same little bits of kind of randomly controlled territory that will go back and forth. No real inroads or real victories, just skirmishes that they can talk about. So they are all under essentially a similar model. He does talk about it a little bit, but we don't ever go inside of those countries or those states.
Okay.
Any other questions before we finish up chapter 4 here? No? All right. Let's continue then. I like what he does talking about how you have one thing being said, and he's part of how these things being said. For example, boot production, right? The news will talk about how many boots are produced, how awesome the production is, how many people have boots. And Winston's like, you can go down the street, you can see people that don't have shoes. There's a disconnect there between what you're being told and what you're going to be able to see. You can't ever mention it, though. You have to engage in what concept? It's already been mentioned today. It's integral throughout the book. Malaya mentioned it earlier. Josh, what is that? I don't know if Josh can hear us. Josh is eating breakfast.
Yeah, I can hear you. I just had it on mute.
What's that concept?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm not sure. I wasn't. I'm not sure.
What's that concept? Andrea? Aaron?
Doublethink.
Doublethink. The ability to see two things at the same time that are diametrically opposed to each other and believe them both to be true at the same time. Doublethink. Right? Big Brother is awesome. Everything is going super, super great. And you smile and you say it with a great look on your face because you know you're being watched. And in fact, you start to just believe it so that your expressions are actually accurate. And then you might turn to somebody. Winston has a friend that does this. Man, Big Brother's doing great. Look at all this production. I haven't been able to get a razor in 6 weeks. Do you have an extra one? And be able to say, things are awesome. Production is great. I can't get this simple piece of metal to shave my face properly. Do you have a spare one? Doublethink. To be able to believe what you are required to believe when you're required to believe it. And if you're told something is different in the next second, you believe that too. That's doublethink. And that's a term that has worked its way into our lexicon. You've heard that before. Maybe it passed by, you didn't quite get it or whatever. Think about anytime you hear or read Big Brother in terms of a surveillance state or being watched. That comes from Orwell. If you hear about doublethink, somebody saying something but believing something else, or appearing to believe two different things at the same time, that's doublethink. It happens. It sounds weird. It happens. We see examples of it every day.
Wait, so is it almost kind of like just being a hypocrite in a sense?
It is being hypocritical, for sure.
But it's like forced, right? Kind of.
It's like what?
It's forced upon them because of Big Brother.
It is forced on them. And so you have in the way that it comes from the ruling class, it's hypocritical. It's a little different for the people, as Josh says, that are forced to believe this, to believe things that aren't true. And what is it for them? These aren't stupid people. We can't look at the entire world population and go, every single one of them is just dumb enough to do that. I mentioned this last time. It is survival. It is a way that you force your mind to work in order to survive. Because there's real penalties for believing or saying the wrong thing. That make sense? Okay, that's what it is. He talks about people, some of those real repercussions, real penalties. What is it called when somebody believes, says the wrong thing? Aaron?
Thought crime.
It is a thought crime. What's the penalty?
Death.
Death. What is he called? Death. It's not just dead. Malaya?
Vaporized.
Vaporized. The person no longer exists. Their names are removed from lists. They no longer have any reference to them at all. You think ghosting is bad. Vaporizing removes everything.
Wait, so when someone gets vaporized, do people have to also pretend like they never existed, or are they allowed to, like, continue?
No, they can't. That person then never existed. They would have to engage in doublethink.
Okay. Right?
It's like, oh, I knew Josh. Josh was, he was a great guy. He worked in the cubicle next to mine. Who are you talking about? Josh who?
No, it's like, oh, he was vaporized.
No, okay, you wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay.
You wouldn't acknowledge the fact that that situation exists, because that would mean that somebody was not agreeing with Big Brother. It isn't just that you, oh, yeah, I need to remember not to do that. You have to engage in doublethink. Somebody might go, oh, where's Josh today? And people would be like, don't know what you're talking about. You would recognize immediately there never was a Josh. You wouldn't say, oh, we were supposed to play softball tonight, or we were supposed to go down to the, to the Big Brother Club and make banners. Nope, he wasn't there. He never was there. There was never a person named Josh. He's been vaporized, eliminated from the concept of that person, and eliminated from the real, anything real that that person had done. Just gone.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, survival in this situation requires doublethink. We see it a little bit at the beginning when Winston is engaging in the 2 minutes hate. You remember that? And he's screaming just as loud as anyone else. He's hating what's on the screen. He's doing that, and in a way, he's believing it in order to look like he's believing it. At that point in time, he believes it. That's one of the things that keeps him safe. All right? And that, a lot of that is, once we hear about the vaporization, Winston finishes up this chapter doing what task? Does he finish this? This chapter, what's he doing? Dominique?
He's like looking at the person lops the cuticle.
He does look at that person, but what's he doing? He's doing something for his job. Right? He looks at Tillotson, right? Across the way. But what is he really doing? Yeah, Aaron?
Was he inventing the person to replace Comrade Withers?
He was, right? This is Comrade Ogilvy, right? Kind of an interesting name. Don't come across it too often. Now, Comrade Ogilvy is somebody who does not exist at all. Never did until what? Aaron, go ahead and continue.
Today?
Today, tell the time that Winston is working on it. When Winston is done, he says that Ogilvy exists as much as any other character in history. Right? Did you guys catch that? At the end of 4. Comrade Ogilvy, who had never existed in the present, now existed in the past. And when once the act of forgery was forgotten, he would exist just as authentically and upon the same evidence as Charlemagne or Caesar. Make sense? Does that horrify you? It should. the things that we have in history, if we cannot trust their provenance, their origin, how they get there, then that history is flawed. And any way to look up the legitimacy of a person in this society would show that Comrade Ogilvie was born, was in the military, was a heroic person, and then died. And you would have no way to challenge it, because every reference would indicate exactly what Big Brother wanted to represent. Okay, so that's what you have. Now, some of you had said that the story started off a little bit slowly, right? That there wasn't a lot happening, and that's true, okay? And that's going to be the case in anything that has a very different world to create, right? It's called world building. Those of you that like to do your own writing, you'll know a little bit about that. If you're aware of the stories, the more different the world is to the one that the reader is actually exists in, you have to have some world building going on. Does that make sense? So you have to establish what the place looks like, feels like. He even talks about what it smells like. Got to understand what is happening so that we know, get a sense for what Winston is like, what Big Brother is, these concepts. And now after we get through chapter 4, we've got a little bit of an idea. And that's going to give us a really solid grounding now when things do start to happen. Okay, so the characters that we've run into so far, obviously we've got Winston, right? And Winston Smith. Smith is a, what kind of name is Smith? Aaron?
Common?
Yeah, it's a common name, right? We utilize Smith or Jones, you know, a lot of times to show a common name. It makes Winston what kind of character? Yeah, Aaron?
Ordinary?
Ordinary, yes, but also everybody.
One. Oh,
okay.
I was going to, oh, sorry, never mind, go ahead.
No, what's that, Jeff?
I was just going to say, like, somebody who, like, if he died, it could be, like, easily forgotten, because I could just be replaced with like any other ordinary person, kind of.
Well, yeah, in his life, he's absolutely interchangeable, that's for sure. But from the reader's side, what you're looking at is you want to be able to put Orwell would like for us to be able to put that person, yourself, in that person's position, right? It's like this could happen. This could be something that is going, it could happen if we're not careful. We've got to remember these types of works. Right? They fall under what category?
The dystopian.
A dystopian. These categories are not what people, you know, Orwell's not looking at this going, I hope the world ends up that way. He's looking at the world and saying, there's some problems here. There's some things that we need to worry about. And if we don't worry about them now, they're going to get worse. And when they get worse, this is what could happen. That's what a dystopia is, right? Nobody going, yeah, this is what I want to see happen. It's what I'm desperately afraid is going to happen. I don't want this to happen. I want to warn people to look out for these things. That's what he's doing, okay? All right, so that's what I wanted to cover. We were through 4. Got to be some questions in the first part of this book. What kind of questions do you guys have?
I have a question about the, like, the erasing names thing. I just had, like,
okay.
So if somebody did, like, you know how we build, like, monuments for people if they do something really good or stuff like that?
Right.
So what if somebody did that and then they were to get vaporized, would the name of, like, the monument thing get changed, or would they just, like, remove it, or what do you think they would do?
Well, in the off chance that something that large was done for somebody other than Big Brother, it would either be destroyed or somebody else's name would be put on it. And then every time you walked by it, it's been that way forever. Does that answer?
Yeah.
Okay. What else? Yeah, Malia?
In the beginning of chapter 3, when he was talking about his memories with his family,
right.
Were they on a ship? I was kind of confused about that part.
No, they were in London. Before, okay. So Winston is, how old is Winston? It says in chapter 1. Is he super old?
Kind of middle-aged.
Yeah, kind of. We'll say he's pretty young, just to make some of us feel better. He's 39.
Yeah.
Okay. So really shouldn't be very old, but he's kind of decrepit, right? He's not in very good shape. He doesn't eat well. There's not a lot of food there. Not in the food that's there is not good. They're encouraged to smoke and drink. He's just not in good physical condition. Okay? But he's old enough to remember a little bit of before Big Brother. He remembers war and deprivation. He had a sister. He had a mother. The father is even had disappeared earlier than that. He has almost no memory of him. But they are in a war-torn London. They hid in the underground, right? You guys know the underground is the subway system in London? Okay, so they hide in the tubes underground as part of their, where they would go to shelter in from the bombs, which is very much what happened in World War II, right? London was bombed horribly by the Germans, right? And so the air raids and the sirens and the hiding from the planes and trying to be in a safe place, absolutely something that happened, something that he was alive for. He lived through that kind of thing. Orwell fought in war. He fought in Spain. He wrote about his experiences. So this isn't something that he's like, oh, I bet war is really tough. It was, and he knew it. So they weren't on a ship, but they are in a place that is being that has been systematically destroyed. And he remembers that from before Big Brother came to power. He also dreams of a place that is what does he call that place that he dreams of? Aaron?
The Golden Country.
The Golden Country, right? It's this kind of soft focus, beautiful place, free, clear. He's not being watched. It's a dreamlike place. And he will return to that over and over. Okay. But it's good, Malaya, it's good to bring up his family, right? The idea that he had a family, he knew about them, he remembers them, and he also has some guilt about the fact that he's the one that survived. And probably his sister and mother didn't, but perhaps even worse, he doesn't know for sure what happened to them. Okay, good question. What else we got?
I was wondering, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you guys raise your hand, I'll call on you. I can see you, except for Anthony, Grace, and Jesus. I can't see you guys, so you can... Well, you can chime in when you need to, if you can hear me. You're all muted, but if you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. All right, Aaron, I think you were on the question stage.
Yeah, this is another sort of like speculative question, but do we know how like Oceania like managed to like combine all of this like land and countries to make one like massive country, I guess, and for East Asia and Eurasia as well?
We don't. It is a type of what we would put under the category now is kind of like a hyper-globalization, okay, where the states have allowed, not states like the United States, but broad political convergences. their power has been allowed to congregate in one place, and then power it expands out. You can almost look at it as a type of three-stage Roman acquisition process, right? Remember what Rome did. Rome was really into acquisitions, right? Yeah. They spread their empire. Who else was known for being acquisitive in their approach to obtaining more property? Yeah, Aaron?
Great Britain.
Yeah, Great Britain, exactly. The sun never sets on the British Empire, right? You ever heard that statement?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
British rule for a long time incorporated a lot of what Oceania incorporates in this story, right? It wouldn't take too much to think of if England had been a little smarter about what area of the world, they could have been a huge, huge country separated by oceans, but still one country. A little smarter, a little more, little better in terms of managing their resources. Oh, you guys are killing. Which country? Oh. I don't know, about 250 years ago, if they'd been a little smarter about something, they had some colonists that went to a different place and then lost it.
Are you just talking about like the United States?
States. The United States, the area that we call the United States right now, and Abby, I'm telling your dad that you didn't answer that question. So the idea of what could have happened, England was the dominant power in the world at that time. Yeah? Yeah? England was a dominant power at that time. They had a huge, they didn't even know how big of a place that would have been theirs, and they lost it. If they had done a better job and then kept colonizing the way that the people that became Americans did, it is not an inconsequential thing to think that all of the Americas would have been Britain. Their biggest problem would have been populating it with more British people because it was so big. So, in answer to Aaron's question, how do these things exist this way? It is through colonization or conquering and then establishing essentially borders that are basically set and then always being at war on the edges. And we have, think about the different types of conflicts that existed before the United States borders were actually set the way that we look at them now, right? How many different conflicts with Spain, with France, with Mexico? Trying to figure out what's going to happen with Texas. What's that southern border going to look like? All of those things tie into what Orwell's talking about. And we've got authors. Has anybody ever seen The Man in the High Tower? Okay, well, what that does is imagine that a different history, right? An entirely alternate history where America loses World War II. And then that territory then is no longer the United States. It is divvied up between the Axis powers. And that's one of the ways that people think about what would happen if this had happened or if another scenario had happened. And it talks about a resistance in what used to be America, which is now split between the Axis powers, predominantly Japan and Germany, in the 1940s and 50s. Does that make sense? So I don't know, Aaron, if that answers your question. It doesn't say specifically, but we've got lots of historical record that talks about similar things. And we've already got some very large countries. We are a large country, right? Russia, fairly good sized. China, a few people. And you could see if you had the desire to expand and you did it in a Machiavellian way, right? Machiavellian, what does that mean?
Like taking over through force, right?
Well, doing anything by any means necessary. Okay. So Machiavellian means, hey, you want to be king? That means you're going to have to kill people in your family. Okay, that's fair. That's what it takes. You guys have seen, it seems like you've all seen the Marvel Universe, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you remember Infinity War, who's the main bad guy in that?
Oh.
Yeah, Aaron?
Thanos.
Okay, in order for Thanos to get absolute power, he has to make a very Machiavellian decision. What does he have to do? Yeah, Abby, I saw your hand move.
Get what he wants. He kind of has to murder billions of people and creatures.
Well, he did do that, but that was his end desire. In order to get the power to do that, Sarah, what did he have to do?
He had to kill his daughter.
He had to kill Gamora, right? The one thing that he loved, he had to kill. There's no other Machiavellian example that you need, right? That was the question posed. You want this power? How much do you want that power? If you were to look at any of these major militaries that are now or at any time in history, if they decide to acquire property, they do until something goes wrong. Does that make sense? That's one of the reasons that smaller countries are afraid of bigger countries, because it's all political to keep things stable. You have to rely on the fact that a larger country is not just going to say, I like your stuff better than you. It's very much rocket. It's like, well, what if I want their raw materials more than they do? You want them to go, well, that's still wrong. Right? Now I switched to Guardians of the Galaxy, but I think you can all work with me there. Rocket? Right? Raccoon with a rifle? All right. What other questions do we have? First part of this book. Yeah, Josh.
I was wondering, what social status are the police in? Like, are they...
The proletariat?
Yeah.
The proletariats are at the bottom of the barrel. So we've got, let me see, hold on. Can you guys see my whiteboard?
Yeah.
All right, okay, perfect. I'm very happy with this prop. I feel like I've got a thing going here. Watch this. Woo! Some of you are impressed. That's good. Yeah. All right. So if you want to look at what we've got here, you've got a pyramid, right? Can everybody see the whole part of that pyramid? What's at the very, very top?
Big Brother.
Big Brother. Exactly. Now, is Big Brother a real person?
Maybe.
There you go. That's perfect. Maybe he is. Maybe he isn't. Does it matter?
No.
No. Doesn't matter at all if he's a real person. The big deal with Big Brother is that he's a concept that you believe in. Is he a real person? Yes. Is he a group of people? He sure is. Did he ever exist? Yes. No. Doesn't matter. Big Brother is a face. He's on the coin. He's on the poster. Whether he exists in reality or as that person doesn't matter. Okay, now the next part, a little bit bigger. Now, you guys are kind of guinea pigs. I haven't done the live thing here. Can you read that that says inner party?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the inner party, we've met one person that we know is from the inner party. Who's that? Malaya?
Name like O'Brien.
Exactly. Okay, O'Brien is above Winston in the hierarchy of this society. Winston belongs to what?
Outer party.
The outer party. And now this answer, Josh is like, this isn't answering my question at all, but it is. This is the prole. The proles are about 80% of the population. They have less surveillance because they don't need to be surveilled. Okay, now surveil, that's not a knight that always wears a piece of fabric over his head, okay? You know, surveilled is to be watched, okay? So the proles are considered less than human. They are so unable to organize or to understand their situation that the party only uses them for basically labor. Later on, Winston is going to say, if there's hope, it lies in the proles. They have the potential to overthrow Big Brother if they can understand that they have that potential. And we get into a real chicken and egg situation here. You guys know that conundrum?
Yeah.
Did we have chickens first or did we have eggs first? You can't have an egg without a chicken to lay it, but you can't have a chicken if you don't have an egg, so which one came first? Right, so that's the conundrum here is the proles don't understand. They work very hard, very long, they die early, they have no access to education, they have access to the lottery, lots of alcohol, and lots of hard work, and that's it. So they are so under control that they don't even have to be watched the same way that the inner and outer party do. And the outer party is watched much more carefully than the inner party is. So does that answer your question, Josh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very
so what was like the thought police? Where would they be? Oh, sorry. What's that? Like, where would the thought police be in this?
The thought police are a... I don't know if you're going to be able to read this. I didn't plan on doing that. It was a good question. The Thought Police enforce Big Brother's law. So they're kind of a separate outside thing. They would be inner party, but they would also be able to arrest or punish an inner party member as well as an outer party. And of course, they could do whatever they wanted to with the proles. Right, so the thought police are a type of shock troop. Right, they are enforcement that has no check or balance to it whatsoever. Good question. So you guys know the concept of an iceberg, right? Vast majority of the iceberg's mass is below water. What you see at the top is a very small amount. That's what you have here, essentially. Okay, what else? No other questions? Okay, if questions come up, and this is one of those kinds of works that the more you think about it, ideally the more questions you're going to have. And the importance here comes from asking questions that relate to our time now to what Orwell envisioned. And one of these big questions, problems, was surveillance, being watched. being watched all of the time. And he couldn't envision some of the ways that we're watched now. It's not a big jump to take a telescreen and imagine that as what? Something that most of us have in our homes. Yeah, Aaron?
TV.
Yeah, we've got flat screen TVs. If you don't have one, you've seen them. Flat screen TV hung up on the wall. When those first came out, they were just a TV. Now they're not. Now they have the capability to talk to you, and they definitely have the capacity to listen to you. Does that make sense? Right? We bring things into our homes that can listen to us. They're designed to be helpful, and they are. Right? If Alexa's listening right now, I have nothing against Alexa personally. The listening device, Alexa. Ah, man, you guys are making it hard. But these are things that we bring into our home that we allow them to listen to us. We trust that the company that has put it there or asked us to put it there is being careful with what they listen to, that they're not listening to us when we don't expect it. And that trust has already been eroded. You guys have heard these stories, right? Where those things are listening in, they're activated when we don't know about it. It doesn't mean anybody's doing anything wrong, but do you want the kind of invasiveness, whether you're doing anything wrong or not? And this is that surveillance aspect. It's interesting. London, at least a couple of years ago, the last thing that I saw on it, London was the most heavily surveilled country in the world. Kind of ironic, since Brave New World and 1984 both take place in London. But we know that we're surveilled everywhere, right? If you go outside, you're at the bank, you're at school, whatever, you have cameras around, right? So think about the threads that he's worried about and see if you can see examples of that anywhere in our modern society. Okay, for Monday, now how are you guys doing on readings? We've got a schedule we'll need to keep because we definitely need to finish this book. But doing okay reading-wise? You guys through chapter 4 now. I'm gonna add on chapter 5 for Monday. Okay, and then I'll post that on the... on my pages. But everybody doing okay reading wise? Remember, carefully read. We might ramp up a little bit, that we're not going to do too much, but ramp up a little bit, but carefully read. You've got a little bit less, at least for me, and I think probably in a lot of these situations. That means you can dive a little deeper, look up those words, understand what's being said. Think about how interesting these connections are. From my end, I read this every year. And it doesn't get boring. And one of the reasons it doesn't get boring is because it scares me worse every year. The things that he's talking about, we see aspects of it in our lives today. And they should be worrisome. Not panic-stricken, but certainly something that you are aware of as you enter into the stage where you're going to be voting, where you're going to be understanding what the situations are. You need to be thinking about these sorts of things. So that's what I'd like for you to do. Dive into it. Make sure you understand the vocabulary. Think about what he's talking about with your language, with being observed, and what he's talking about with history. Does that make sense? Any other questions before we sign off for today? All right. Well, I appreciate people taking the time to make it. I am going to post this a little later today. So if you want to rewatch it or let people know that it's up there, you can do that. And I will go ahead and end the meeting if there's no other questions. If you come up with something that you wanted to ask, email it, and I will get it into the next lecture. Sound good? All right. Thanks, everybody. It's good to see you. It's I miss having you guys in class. So it's good to see some faces, and I hope you guys stay safe and healthy.
You too.
Thank you.